some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm joined tonight by Ray Dieter, my co-host from the DBA Bars. How are you, Ray? How was your weekend?
My weekend was great. I had a really great time, had some great food, but today I am a very thirsty man.
Well, we're rocking on there. He's going to play all of the Tom T. Hall I Like Beer song tonight, which is our favorite song. We got some pretty cool guests. First, we're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. There's a wealth of information on greatbrewers.com, including description of beer styles and the great beer test to challenge your beer IQ. Check out greatbrewers.com. And we're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out goodbeerseal.com. Some special guests tonight. We've got James Langstein, who's from Bronx Ale House, a member of the Good Beer Seal. And Josh Bernstein, a great beer writer. We know him from Imbibe and some other magazines. How are you guys? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. We've been waiting a while to have a Bronx Ale House. Last year, some of the writers from the Good Beer Seal nomination committee scoured New York City, and they found a bar in Bronx called Bronx Ale House, and it was you. And they brought you to us, James.
Well, thank you guys for including us.
So what did you guys go through to open a bar in the Bronx? You know, where'd you get inspired to do it in that location? You know, tell us what you went through when you opened that bar.
My partners and I, who also have a hand where I used to manage at George Keeley's, also another Good Seal bar, we're looking for a project to do together, but looking for a neighborhood that wasn't necessarily already served by the, you know, the craft beer bars. So, and you know, the economic situations didn't hurt that Brooklyn and Manhattan have become very expensive as well. So we kind of said, let's give it a shot up here. We thought there was the population to support it. So far about 20 months in, I think we're right. So, it's going well.
Hey, James, I got a question for you. How do we get there from, like, downtown? From, I mean, what train is nearby your place?
The one train goes straight there. We're about 50 yards off the 238th Street stop on the one train.
Okay, cool. So it's you just hop on a train, on the one train in Manhattan, and you go straight on up.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep, near Van Cortlandt Park. And,
you know. Josh, have you been to the Bronx Ale House?
You know what? I was up in the Bronx about a month ago checking out this kosher deli. We're doing a homebrew tour up in the Bronx, and so we were going to go there afterward, but it didn't quite work out in timing.
So you do some homebrew tours. I've heard about this.
Yeah, well,
sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, we did one actually on Sunday. Well, basically, there's all these great homebrewers all across the city, and for people that are just starting out homebrewing, it's hard to really, I mean, there's the Malt and Barley Society, there's New York City Homebrewers Guild, but not everyone has time to go to the meeting. So for this, it's a way for people to really, you get to meet the brewers and try their beers, and it's almost like a roving house party in a way.
And is there a Bronx Brewing Company that's starting up too, or is that just a fable?
Well, there are two Bronx brewing companies, which are sometimes confusing. One is the Bronx Brewing Company with an X, who I believe are still trying to fully get off the ground. We recently did a release party for the Jonas Bronx with a CK apostrophe S, who is the namesake of the Bronx. Beer company, so they're brewing outside of the city right now. I think the goal is to eventually open up their own shop in the Bronx. Their founder and owner and brewer is from the Bronx, so I think that's really his ultimate goal.
think there's going to be another throwdown, like the Brooklyn Gin, the Bronx Ale House, or the Bronx?
I've actually already heard rumblings about that, and I just want to serve good beer. I'm not getting involved in
that. You're staying on the sidelines.
And you're the one good beer seal bar in the Bronx.
Yeah. Have you tried these guys' beer before? Are they actually producing stuff, or are they contracting someplace else?
Jonas Bronx is contracting out of the city, but he made a good IPA and a good vice beer. And the Bronx Brewery, as far as I know, is not brewing anything commercially yet. Actually, just knowing the guys, I've had a sip of their Rivered Ale, as they call it. But I don't know if that's a final product yet or what. But it was good stuff.
Well, James, you know, a lot of our listeners would like to know what goes into opening a bar. Was there any particular difficulties you had to go through or hurdles that you'd like to talk about?
I think the difficulties opening a bar are probably common to what, you know, maybe you encountered at Jimmy's or Ray encountered at DBA. You know, obviously there's a lot to coordinate between State Liquor Authority, Buildings Department, all sorts of that when you're doing construction. The main challenge for us was finding a place that we really believed had a clientele and one that was not necessarily served or even in some neighborhoods over, you know, saturated with craft beer bars, if that's possible.
Are there a lot of bars in general in the Bronx? I've never been up there. That's probably a stupid question.
There's plenty of bars. You know, a lot of the neighborhood we're in, as a lot of the Bronx in, are old Irish neighborhoods. Unfortunately, the bars have kind of tended to stay that way. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, embrace craft beer as much as we do here.
One of the big issues opening up a bar in Manhattan and in Brooklyn is, like, you can't have so many licenses within, I think it's 300 feet. I forget the number of feet. So was that an issue for you guys up there? In Manhattan, it's like you pretty much can't open a new place up because you're definitely within 300 feet of a bar, regardless of where you are, unless you're in the river.
I think in terms of stuff like that, the community board seemed more receptive and willing to, you know, happy about opening a new business like ours, as opposed to hearing all the stories I've heard in Manhattan. And actually, my partners and I dealt with an issue in Midtown Manhattan before we wound up in the Bronx, thinking about opening there. So they were kind of happy to have us, which was nice.
Pub owners are leaders in their community.
Yeah.
And there's no question of that.
Now, do you find a lot of the clientele was heading into Manhattan for craft beer before, and like this is a way for them not to have to really venture so far to get a great beer in their neighborhood?
Definitely. It's a combination of people that I used to work on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and that was kind of the closest neighborhood to go to for a lot of Bronxites to grab a good beer. You know, even people from Washington Heights and Inwood and Upper Manhattan were going down that far to get a decent pint of beer. Mm-hmm. So now they don't have to go as far. The other thing we see is that people that weren't venturing out for good beer because they weren't necessarily getting it in their neighborhood now have a place to go, and we're kind of educating a lot of the you know, the local community that wasn't oriented craft beer about it.
But I bet
it.
You always can get a great pint of Guinness up there in all those Irish bars.
You can in a lot of them, and there's a couple right in the neighborhood that I go to when I'm really still in the mood for a Guinness.
What are some of the names of those bars?
J.C. Maxx are our good friends next door, and they serve a great pint and have a great pool table and great bartenders, so if you just want the traditional thing, go for that.
You know, sometimes you go to these like hole-in-the-wall Irish bars, and we all know them, and you walk in there and you're like, you get a pint of Guinness, and it's so, so good. It's like, how come the Guinness tastes so good at, you know, oh, whoever it is bar?
Because all the other beer is really bad.
That's no, I think actually usually the case. The drinkable beer.
Right, they go through 3 barrels a day, so the line is constantly clean, and the beer is as fresh as it gets. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've had some great, great Guinness. And it's like, you know, wow, the Guinness at DBA is never as good as a Guinness at, like, you know, Swift, which is another great bar not too far from DBA in
Manhattan. That's what they're serving all day.
Right. Actually, I don't even serve Guinness anymore, so that's why they're Guinness is better than ours.
You don't really?
No, we use O'Hara's. Mm-hmm. I really like O'Hara's. It's actually brewed in Ireland. And,
do you know what we do? We at one or two times did have Guinness, but we do keep a Guinness style stout. So it's something that's a nitro pour. It changes. Most like often it's the Young's Double Chocolate Stout.
Oh, that's a great beer.
Yeah, people love that. It's expensive too. Donnybrook. I guess we kind of go with them. People really like the beers that we serve, and some of them are really expensive.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
We suck it up. We try to serve our customers the best we can.
That's actually an interesting topic. As a bar owner, it's like the prices keep going up and up for the product, and it's like you really can't bump a pint more than like $6 or $7, you know? Then you try to like make a smaller serving. It's a challenge trying to keep your customers happy and actually keep the interesting beers flowing.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of bars that start using those 14-ounce pints, which the ones... The cheater pints.
So they're never really thick, at DBA. Never.
With the thick bottoms never and like the thick Bronx glasses. And so it's like they fill it up, and then with like a good head on top, it's just like you get 11, 12 ounces sometimes if they don't pour it properly. Yeah. And so it's just... It's cheaper to buy a bottle of beer in that case.
You can spot a cheater pint.
What?
You can spot it.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a thick bottom. Like, think of, like, Coke bottle eyeglasses.
Yeah, it also weighs, like, twice as much as an average.
It just feels different in your hand. It feels, like, really substantial.
Well, James, you brought a really nice selection of beers with you today. And are they reflective of what you serve at the Bronx Ale House?
Definitely. We've had all of these beers at the Bronx Ale House in the last... couple months at least. We have I brought a selection of Belgian inspired IPAs, so kind of hybrid style that's new to maybe both Belgian brewers and some American brewers that brewed a lot of IPAs and are adding that Belgian yeastiness to a lot of what they're doing.
Mm. What's this beer that I'm drinking?
That was the one I brought, which I also brought a Belgian IPA because we're thinking alike. It's like great minds right here. This is a Carl Strauss Brewing Company from San Diego, and this is their new Black Ball Belgian IPA. So it's like, you know, it's pretty lean. It's got a really nice...
Let's pass that one around.
It's got a really nice hop presence. I think it's got, I'm not sure which New Zealand hops in there, but it's got this really delicious profile, a little white wine.
What's the brewery?
Carl Strauss. They're just out of the San Diego area.
Okay.
They've been around for about 20 years, but they don't really...
Sell in New York or just
they
in
do
San,
not,
San Diego?
They do not sell in New York, and so...
Not yet.
Not yet. And probably not. I mean, they've been around for 20 years.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, they're just... they're the classical story. They serve their region well, and their region, they don't need to expand anymore.
How did you find them?
Right about beer, and I get beers that show up on my doorstep sometimes.
Oh, I understand.
So I share them with
Imbibe Magazine.
Yeah, Imbibe.
I've
been a beer feature writer for Imbibe Magazine for about 5 years. I worked for Time Out for about 6 years, and I work for New York Press, everything down the line. I used to work for Gourmet as well. And then
tell us about your book.
Yeah, I spent most of 2010 writing this book, Brood Awakening, behind beers and the brewers leading the craft brewing revolution. It's published by Sterling this fall, and so basically we're going into what's been happening in American brewing over the last 5 to 10 years, and where it's going in the next 5 to 10 years, because we haven't seen such a great change in brewing since Prohibition. I mean, the styles and the innovation, I mean, it's how bad it was back then, it's just as good right now, because you know, one thing's America has lost its way with a lot of cars, a lot of manufacturing, but brewing, in a way, is one way that people are looking toward America for inspiration now. And so that's what this book is all about. It's all about the innovation and the people. I mean, there's beer in a glass, but it's about the people putting the beer in the glass. So I'm trying to tell the stories behind the pint glass. And so it's, I mean, been all across the country, Asheville, Austin, San Francisco, both Portlands, and then it's just...
Asheville,
North Carolina is one of the best brewing hotspots. For a city of 70 or 80,000, they have, I think, 10 or 11 breweries.
Really?
I mean, more than New York City. I mean, we're sitting here with 8 million people with 3 or 4 breweries within city limits, which is crazy.
And Asheville, North Carolina, that's really...
You know, I mean, they got space down there.
What breweries are down there?
Ray, have you been down there?
Not since they had 8 breweries, that's for sure.
French Broad's down there, Wedge Brewing, Pisgah makes some of the best organic ales in the country, and there's tons of great stuff.
So all that stuff keeps local down there, so you have to go down there to check it out.
Pretty much. Some of them like get around the region a little bit. Pisgah distributes a little bit around the area.
Pisgah? How do you spell
Pisgah,
it?
Pisgah, P-I-S-G-A-H.
Okay.
And then there's Highland Brewing, which that's kind of a big southern brand. They've been around for about 10, 15 years, okay. I think.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Josh Bernstein about his secret beers. on Beer Sessions Radio.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Sunday at 3:30 p.m., tune in to We Dig Plants with garden designers Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg of Groundworks, Inc. The girls delve into our human relationship with plants as food, medicine, fodder, and a source of beauty and inspiration. They bring the culture to horticulture and discuss such topics as botany how-to, cultivation, horticultural history, garden design trends, and all things generally budding. Again, that's every Sunday at 3:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right. Give a big shout-out to We Dig Plants, one of our favorite shows on the Heritage Radio Network. Today's podcast, Beer Sessions Radio, is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. Check out Beer Cloud app. Go to GreatBrewers.com, and it's all about the brewers. All right, we're here with Josh Bernstein, a great writer of Imbibe Magazine. Mm-hmm. He's got a book coming out in the fall. We've got James from Bronx Ale House and Ray Dieter from DBA. And Josh, you were talking about some of the little hidden gems around the country that you like,
uh-huh.
And you were talking about Portland, Maine.
Uh-huh.
What was the brewery in Portland, Maine that you were just talking? Did you bring it? You brought a beer from Portland, Maine.
We're going to pop that open in a second. I actually haven't had a chance to try it yet. It's going to be one of the my inaugural ride with this, but it's called Rising Tide. Portland, Maine is one of these people that go up there. They know it's a great beer town, but I mean, nationally, you have Allagash Brewing that's really driving the conversation on Belgian beers and a lot of sour beers in America, but there's such a small local-knit brew pub scene up there, too. You have Gritty McDuff's, you have Sebago, and these are just local places where you can pop into town, pay $4, get a 20-ounce beer of delicious locally brewed beer. And there's also been a bunch of small nanobreweries. A nanobrewery is just a loose definition is just a brewery, for me, that makes 3 barrels or less at a time, and so that's maybe about 6 kegs.
Well, Gritty McDuff's not a brewery. That's a brew pub.
That's a brew pub, yeah.
A beer pub.
A beer bar. No, they actually brew there.
They brew at Gritty McDuff's?
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they actually make their own beers and all that.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I know they had like thousands of local stuff going on, but I didn't know.
No, they make their own beers. They make a
Is that
really,
new? They've always done that?
They've done it forever. They make a really great brown ale.
Wow.
Ray, have you been up to Portland, Maine?
Yes, I have. And obviously not the same Portland, Maine that Josh has been to. But
I don't know. I spent a month. Every year I try to live in a different city and really try to get a feel for it.
Well, that's cool.
A few years ago, I went to Montreal to check out the beer and the food scene up there. And then about 4 years ago, I went to Portland, Maine, and rented a house and just learned all about it. Because, you know, you go to a city for 2-3 days, and you're going to...
Right, you're going to miss good stuff. You've got to be around.
Only by, like, settling into the rhythms, you actually get a feel.
Well, you got Shipyard up there, right?
Yeah, Shipyard. And then there's this new one, Maine Beer Company, and they're making this really great Spring Peeper Ale, which is this really nice, bright, easy-drinking American Pale Ale. And they just had a nice stout aged on vanilla beans, and... there's so much stuff.
Are they all using that Pugsley system, or are they getting their own
stuff?
No,
these are people, like the Pugsley one, they're not really using the English East strains, which, right. So they're all using different beers now.
Okay, cool. Josh, since you're a beer writer, do you just get a lot of free beer all the time?
There's stuff that comes in the mail, but then, you know what, it makes your friends happy. And so I try never, you know what, if there's beer in my fridge, people can always drink it. I don't ever hoard anything, it's always there for the taking, because I can't drink that much beer in a day. And, you know, if you get like a 22-ounce, 12% beer, I mean, what am I going to do, drink it after dinner? I mean, I'm done for the night, and so.
Well, talking about who gets to drink a lot of beer, we have two very special guests who've just walked in. They're known as the Real Alewives of New York City. We've got Ruth Smirsky and Carolyn Edgecombe. Carolyn's also the president of the Malted Barley Appreciation Society in Brooklyn. And we're really honored to have you guys on. And I have a feeling that the two of you know a lot about beer. Ruth and Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having us.
All right. So what's going on this week? Do you have Real Alewives coming up?
Yeah, we have our next meeting on April 29th, I believe. It's Friday. It's the last Friday of every month.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
At Jimmy's.
Jimmy's number 43.
So I have a question. So
yeah.
Real Alewives. So you're married to guys, or you're married to the beer?
Married to the beer.
Hell yeah.
Oh, okay.
Definitely to the beer.
Yeah.
Beer wins. I actually read somewhere, and I'm not going to remember the dates of this, but at one time, if a woman was offered a beer by a man, that they were considered betrothed. So there is some history behind this. But
I hate that idea.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So guys should come to Jimmy's number 43 on 9 o'clock on Friday and wait to hang out with some of their real alewives.
Actually, one of our members, her fiancé, sat at your bar while she was in their meeting.
And her fiancé was a bottle of Avery double IPA.
No, it was actually a man.
Oh, okay.
An actual person.
An actual person.
And he was quite patient waiting for her to finish.
I think he was really excited because he found our club on, I think, your blog for her and was like, you should go. Look, it's not scary. It's only girls.
I think we should set up a club with the wives of beer bar owners. What do you think, Jimmy?
That's a brilliant idea. They should come to our meeting first, then they can have another one.
Well, it does tell us there's a lot of really cool beer appreciation groups, separate from just homebrewing. So there's the New York City Homebrewers Guild that Josh mentioned, and they're really about people who are making beer, right?
Yep. Yeah, and we're not about making beer, although Carolyn is a homebrewer and brings a lot of knowledge to the table. This is really about just appreciation, about people who go to the beer events, love beer, love to try new beer, are curious about it, and also love food, and we try to pair the two together. So
we have a lot of bakers and chefs among us, Ruthie and I.
Yeah. So especially. We like, you know, I mean, I like to drink and I like to eat, and I think they're supposed to go together.
Drinking and eating.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Surprise, surprise.
So what we try to do each meeting is we pick a beer style, and then we tell our members, we're going to talk about ambers, and then we brainstorm on delicious things we can make that will taste delicious with ambers.
So how big is your club? How many members do you guys got?
We don't actually count members. We just people who I think the first meeting we had 22 people. Then the second one was I think like 18, 19. So it kind of varies from week to month to month, but we don't really like count membership.
So, like 22 female beer lovers gathered in one room.
We're too young to really have a typical member or membership yet.
Yeah, no, we just started this year, so we've gotten a lot of interest considering how short of time we've been around. But I think that says something.
It's definitely a great name.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Does this group differ from like the Malted Barley Appreciation Society?
Probably most in that it's style focused per meeting, and that we really try to focus on food.
No dudes, and by the way, I'm trying to talk about
content.
Okay.
As opposed to the gender breakdown.
Yeah, that's kind of a given.
Maybe you need to have a monthly honorary guest like Ray Dieter or something.
Right. Hey, if he wants one guy in.
If he can be our speaker, you know, that's cool.
No, we allow male speakers. We just, you know, the idea, the spirit is that, you know, it's for the women to kind of get together. And because I think, you know, a lot of times you end up getting into beer because you have a boyfriend or your fiance or whatever, or maybe you just get into it, but it is very male centric. And so it's nice to have a space of 2 hours.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, to kind of, I wouldn't go that bar, but it's definitely like a nice space to just kind of get together, drink, talk about the beer. We talk about, you know, what we're smelling, what we're tasting. We actually started bringing in the BJCP notes that Carolyn had, and we hand out the pamphlets and everybody.
The what notes?
I made out these little booklets of kind of like fill in the blank like notes according to the BJCP style guidelines.
What does that stand for?
The Beer Judge Certification Program.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah,
for to clarify that.
Yes.
So we actually go through those at the meetings. We'll try with every beer. So everybody brings a bottle to the meeting, depending on the style. And what we do is we'll taste all the bottles. And as we're tasting them, we'll talk about them together. So it's really nice because you can kind of learn a lot. You can see sort of subjectively what other people get out of beers that, you know, you don't get or you do get. And it's kind of a nice way to discover them together.
That sounds like a great time. Sounds like a lot. Sounds great.
It is. And you usually make like cupcakes and cookies.
Yeah. Cupcakes.
Most and of sometimes us, the bluegrass players come in.
I know. 9 p.m. We sometimes have live music accompanying our
What night is this event?
At 9, there's a band of kind of bluegrass players that comes in. And since nobody's really in the back room at that time except us, we get a sort of little private show.
So what night does this happen? It's
the last Friday of every month.
Okay, well,
at Jimmy's number 43.
At Jimmy's. At Jimmy's number 43.
When you're ready to venture into Brooklyn, I'd love to help you guys out.
Ray, yeah. Do you have any regular groups? Wait, let's hold on. Ray, this is kind of neat, you know, about these groups that meet at bars. Do you have any regular groups that meet or
yeah,
gather?
Yeah, we do. We have the CSAs. We've got three CSAs that meet there. We have the Paisley Farms, we have the Piggery, and we have that new CSA, and the name escapes me, the
High Point Farms.
High Point Farms.
So you're saying at DBA Brooklyn, you have a lot of things like CSA farm pickups?
Yep. And we have a bunch of stuff, and we have Liquids of Interest, obviously, every Monday night that I host. And it's.
But
it's
a bar can be a place for gathering.
A community place that people gather to talk and meet and have a beer.
James, do you have anything like that going on at the Bronx Ale House?
We actually often host the. I think they were originally just the Westchester Home Brewing Association. I don't know if they've officially included Bronx and Westchester because we're close enough there. Homebrewers from the Bronx and Westchester are meeting. They're a very informal meeting, but they're often at our place. Other than that, we do the typical beer events every other week, hoping to get brewers,
I'm just pointing at Josh. Now what I want to know, because Josh has got a big book. I mean, Josh travels the whole country, and there's not really any, I have to say this, we'll give a moment of silence, Michael Jackson, great beer writer, you know, he died a few years ago. There hasn't, no one's really replaced him in like this, you know, respected, you know, gravitas. The world of beer, there's not a great figure like Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's trying to do that. I think
not that, but what I'm saying, though, is that there are a lot of interesting younger writers who are coming up, and Josh is one of them. I mean, he gets to work as a beer features writer. He's got a book coming out. And are there anything like the Real Alewives or Malt-to-Barley Appreciation groups that you've seen around the country? Any particular really cool groups that you've met?
There's a lot of those popping up nationwide right now. There was Barley's Angels, I think, just popped up. I know. Barley's Angels just popped up on the West Coast in the last few months. And then there's Suzanne Woods, who does the website Beer Lash. She's a rep for Sly Fox, but she does big she does big beer education events for women.
What's her blog called?
What?
The Pink Boots.
And there's also the Pink Boot Society. There's Suzanne Woods is she's Beer Lass, and then there's also the Pink Boot Society, which is a collection of it's basically a loose confederation of all the females working in the brewing industry, and the boots stand for the brewing boots they'd be wearing, and so
pink like. No, pink wellies.
Yeah.
And actually, I was in California this past weekend, and I got to meet some of the Maltose Falcons, which was the first
Maltose
Falcons, yeah. The first homebrewing society in the U.S., which is... Their meetings are... They have to take a Sunday. It's the entire day. They break for lunch. I was like, that's kind of... I'm jealous. I would go back to L.A. just to go to one of your meetings.
And they have
very civilized.
Weekly or monthly? How often?
I believe it was monthly. But they have... a title in their club called the Grand Hydrometer, which I don't know if you're a home brewer, but it tests the gravity of your beers. I thought it was pretty funny. I would like to be a grand.
What does that mean?
That's an elected position.
Yeah, I don't know if it's elected or I don't know.
Ruthie, you had a question. What was that?
Oh no, I was just wondering what that meant in terms of the title of the club. Was that like the highest honor?
I think. Wouldn't you rather be a Grand Hydrometer than president? I don't know.
I guess so.
I would be.
The Maltose Falcons, they're in Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
If anyone from the Maltose Falcons is listening, please write into us at beersessions@gmail.com.
But I think you could almost write a beer book on all the different names of all the brew clubs out there. I mean,
right.
Every pun under the sun.
Yeah.
Josh, it sounds like book two for you.
Yeah. After this one is printed.
Beer lists.
We're going to take another short break. When we come back, we have some questions from listeners on Beer Sessions Radio.
Okay. Don't play!
Oh, unless you're playing checkers, baby.
That's some bump music.
Peace!
Teach you, baby. Some bumpies.
Freak, ball, beat. I drive you nuts in the sea.
Turn me on, baby.
Shut, you're a shut. When we get there, you're gonna have a bump.
Bump, 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 baby. Bump, bump, bump.
When we get up, when we get down. Bouncing on the fire that we've found.
Bump, bump, baby.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Ray Dieter, a.k.a. Bootsy Collins, was just on the air. Ray, what was it like in the old days? Did you have a band or something? Bootsy Collins, Ray Dieter, DBA.
I play guitar a little bit, but yeah, it was kind of boring. The beer business is a lot more fun, Jimmy.
You're just too cool, man. I love you, man. Well, we got James here. I keep calling you James because I forgot your last name. What is it again?
Langstein.
James Langstein.
But James is fine.
So we never got to taste your beer. So you brought us some cool beers. Give us a quick rundown. What beers did you bring and what should we try first?
Well, I brought a combination of both Belgian and American interpretations of the Belgian IPA. I just cracked open some Hubon Schoof, which is really nice, which is a Belgian, hoppy Belgian
ale. Let's pass it around. We love that.
And already...
That's from the Schoof Brewery, right? This is Chris, right?
Yep.
You know, it's actually the... you know, whatever's happened in America with the West Coast, you know, IPAs, there are some traditionalists in Belgium who say that there was also a traditional, like, hoppy IPA style that was Belgian. And I think that this is supposed to be, but whether that happened after America or not,
it seems
I don't know.
Like
what do you
gotten,
think of that?
It seems like they've gotten back to it because we've done so much stuff with really hop-centric flavors in the U.S., it's interesting comparing it to the Carl Strauss that we just had because the American versions of the Belgio IPA or whatever you want to call it seem to even accentuate the hops more, whereas you really get that Belgian yeastiness off the Belgian versions.
Have you had the Brasserie de la Seine? Because they've been doing...
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, they make they do that Terrace Bulbo.
One of the great beers in the world.
Like a really low alcohol. I think it's like sub 5%, but it's got
it's like 4.5%.
It's got this beautiful hoppy nose, so it's like it's recreating the session. I mean, Belgium wasn't really all about the sweet beers until the last 50 or 60 years.
I agree, yeah.
And then this is kind of harkening back to the day when they're like easy drinking, delicious
beers. Well, Yvonne, the guy that brews that stuff, is an amazing brewer. Yeah. Have you got to meet that guy?
I haven't had a chance to meet him.
He's been over here once or twice, but he hasn't traveled to America that often. Mm-hmm. But he's a friend. And
so I got a question for you guys. If you had a choice between session beers or the high alcohol beers, which would you prefer?
Oh, well, if anybody's been listening to the show, they know that my choice is session beers.
Excellent.
I'm all about volume.
Okay. Cool.
I'd rather have you know, five good beers than one.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say the high alcohol ones, just because I like a strong punch, and you know, I mean, there's a time and place for session beers, but if I was going to have a gun to my head, I'd probably say the high alcohol.
Josh,
it kind of depends what my night's all about. If I'm drinking for a while, I'm going session. If I'm sharing a night with my friends and I'm like breaking out my delicious beers from the stock, then it's going to be high alcohol beers because those are beers that are made for sharing.
Yeah. Mm. James.
It definitely depends on the night. Sometimes you're watching a game and you need something you can drink for 4 hours, and sometimes you just want to have the best two beers you can find, and that might be
and if the team loses.
Jimmy, I would say I you know, it really depends on the night too. The other night I was just craving the high alcohol beers, and I had things like McKellar Beer Geek Brunch.
Oh yeah.
Until I learned that the coffee beans are digested by ferrets and then turned into beer. And I was like, you know, there's a
civet cats.
Yeah, civet cat smells of this beer.
There's a difference.
Yeah. Some weird stuff. But going back to this Hop Schoof, you know, the Hublon Schoof and Antares Bowler and stuff, it's like, I think we need to just dive in. Maybe we should all do a really cool event one day where we taste all of the interesting you know, Belgian style IPAs that are trying to be a, you know, what is the tradition in Belgium? That's going to be really,
you know, I think
interesting tasting that someone should host.
One of the traditional Belgian IPAs, basically, I think, is Orval, which is a Trappist ale. And we've spoken of this before. It's really an English style IPA made with, you know, in a Trappist monastery. Great beer. If you drank it blindfolded, you would not know that it was like a Belgian Trappist ale. It reads, you know, on your taste buds as an English style IPA.
Well, hey, look, we've got an email question from a listener, Matt P., Rochester, New York. And what's so great about this show? We have people writing in from Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Rochester, New York. So Matt asks all of us here, do we need beer styles? Sure, some brewers are brilliant at brewing true to style, but some are equally brilliant at defining style and creating something new, and it seems to me that the current style categories just can't keep up with the innovations going on today. Ray, what do you think about that?
You know, I used to be a real stickler about, like, here's the style, stick to it. And I think that more and more I'm coming around to the whole great, you know, the style busting traditions. It's like, that's what America's great about. That's what America does, you know. We take what the tradition has laid down, and we take it and we tear it apart. We reinvestigate it and we reassemble it, and we come up with something brand new, and it's great.
You know, I think if you're talking about competitions, then you definitely need style, because you have to have a benchmark to judge. I mean,
absolutely,
competitions,
yes,
in a way, but I mean, overall, I couldn't care less about style. Like, does it taste good or does it taste bad? I mean, that's really what it boils down to for me. I don't care if it doesn't really fit cleanly into one category, but really, if you're getting it judged, then you have to brew to style, and that's your choice if you want to be judged. And a lot of brewers don't care one whit about being judged.
And that makes it really awkward over at the GABF, especially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's okay.
Carolyn, you've actually taken the Beer Judge Certification Program class, right?
Yes, it's intense.
BGCP?
BJCP.
BJCP.
But the nice thing about the style guidelines is that it does provide a basis for comparison and,
sure,
a point of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I think they should absolutely exist. And, you know, brewers, do whatever you want.
So how do you squeeze them in there? So as a judge, you've got your porters, you've got... We can talk about what, you know, what a porter is and what a stout is, and an IPA versus a you know, a pale ale, and all that kind of stuff. There's lots of crazy subtle differences, but how do you squeeze in these Belgian style blah blah blah?
You have the category, I think it's 23A, called Belgian specialty ale.
That can be brewed any place in the world.
It's a kitchen sink style.
It's a kitchen sink for anything that's like, hey, it's Belgian, like a Belgian IPA is kind of falling into that Belgian,
but like a Japanese wit beer, you know, like
there's another catch-all style that I don't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Like, and the beer we're drinking,
like, is this
what
a
beer we drink?
Is this a Japanese IPA?
James gave us a 23A.
Oh, it's a Belgian.
James, is this a 23A?
I suppose so. I have not taken the
what
course
beer is
myself.
This, James?
We're drinking now the Great Divide Belgica, which is another Belgian IPA, they call it, or Belgian-inspired IPA. This one actually is a little more sessionable, so it kind of leads to that discussion we were just having. Do you want the Hublon Schoof or something more sessionable?
Guys, one of the coolest things is happening right now. We have a call-in listener. How are you, listener?
Hello, how you doing?
Who's this?
This is Moses.
How are you, Moses?
I'm doing well.
Right in time for Passover, huh?
Speaking from the burning bush.
Okay, well, let's go. What's your question, bro?
So I was wondering, you know, I've been listening to the show, and you've been talking about a lot of these great beers, most of which I don't know, but there is this thing, Bud Light Lime, and that's been something that's been recommended to me by your guest, and I was just wondering if he had any comments on that.
The first thing is, where do you live?
I live in Brooklyn.
I would say Brooklyn. Moses lives in Crown Heights.
You seem to know Moses very
well. I think
well.
I know Moses, who he is, and he enjoyed that Bud Light Lime.
Is Bud Light Lime a 23A?
I think it's a 23A category.
23A asterisk.
Yes.
I don't know. I was expecting, you know, something along the lines of a Belgian wheat beer, or, you know, perhaps something with a 12-syllable German name, and I get Bud Light Lime. Do you save the good beer recommendations for the classy folks?
Oh, Moses, you were taking us to... Basically, Moses took us on a tour to the racetrack, and so at the Belmont, and he took us to a bodega that had the best beer was a Bud Light.
Josh, were you drinking Bud Light?
I was, and I'm totally okay with it.
Okay.
I drank it too.
Yeah.
Wait. Totally all right, a show of hands here in the panel. Who has tried Bud Light Lime?
One, two, three.
Do it verbal. Ruthie, get on the mic.
I admit it. I am drunk Bud Light Lime.
James?
I have had it.
I've had Bud Light Lime with Moses.
Carolyn?
No, actually, I haven't.
Ray?
I got to tell you truthfully, I didn't know it existed until just now.
Ray, do they have 40-ouncer Bud Light Limes?
I assume they have
oil. They got 24-ounce oil cans of it. So it's
Oil cans.
Yeah.
Wow. Very Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
I've never tried it.
The more you get in your belly.
Sticking with the theme of the show, we will not talk about that anymore. Thank you, Moses.
Thanks, Moses.
All right. Now, going back to styles, let's just bring this up. There was a cool style, and it's been documented in, you know, beer press like Ale Street News. The Black IPA, and I bet Carolyn has a lot to say about this. Is that a style now?
It is not an officially sanctioned BJCP style guideline yet, but as far as I know, they're trying to. Basically, a black IPA is everything you want in IPA, just a little bit darker.
Without the P.
What?
Without the P.
Yes, exactly.
Pale. P for pale.
It would be the IBA.
Yeah. IBA.
But what's the official style? Is it gonna be called a black IBA?
It would
be called a dark IBA.
It would probably be called a black IPA.
Or a Cascadian Dark Ale.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. Cascadian Dark Ale.
I think Josh hit it on the... So that is the official style, correct,
That's not
Josh?
The official style. That's just basically...
That's the style.
That's a provincial designation that's done...
It's the Urban Dictionary
So it has
definition.
To have Cascade Hospice? I mean...
It's a reference to the Pacific Northwest and the Cascade Mountain Range where a lot of the brewers that...
Sure.
...kind of started off brewing...
Well, that's a little too... I think that's a little too region-specific.
It is, I mean... And of course...
I just think that Black IPA is a silly name. I think, you know, I don't know. It's not pale.
I know. It's oxymoronic, but like you're going to go to a bar and you're going to order a black IPA. People can say that at the bar. We're going to do like a blibba. I don't even know what are they going to say.
But
what's a bartender going to go?
It tastes like an IPA for the most part. Like it has the same, a similar, like really
but
strong
aroma. But the pale
part really
is part of the name of an IPA.
Better.
You drive on the parkway and park in the driveway, man. It's America.
That was good,
Josh. And then
Josh.
You drink a black IPA when you get inside.
That was great.
I mean, it's just a name, and it's a name, and like I can't believe people are even fighting about a name.
Well, no, it's an IPA, India Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm. So Ray, you're really stuck on these
but
styles. Is Ray stuck on styles?
Well, is it pale or is it amber?
But Ray, are all the imperial stouts brewed for like the Russian monarchy? Or,
Wait, they're not.
No,
what are you talking about?
I don't know. It's crazy.
This is getting too weird, guys.
Next thing you're going to tell me, there's no Easter Bunny.
I
just had a 23A.
I saw a movie about that.
I had the Great Divide Belgica, a Belgian special ale, really good. I had a Hoblon Schoof, really good. James, give us another beer that you brought, because you brought a really great selection of beers. And I have to say that I bet that Bronx Ale House would be a really good place to go and get beers.
Well, you can
if I was above 125th
at some
Street.
Point, yeah. We rotate those 16 draft lines all the time. But I think next it'd be really interesting to go with that Green Flash Le Freak.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. What color is your Le Freak?
Ray, have you ever been to Green Flash Brewery?
No, I haven't. No.
You know, one of our regular guests, Jen Swartman, is really good friends with the guys from Green Flash.
Yes, she is.
And well, next time we see her, we'll ask her about it.
You got to see, if you were in the studio, you'd see like everybody holding their glass out. Please, I want some.
Yeah.
James got Green very Flash. Popular right now.
Well, separate from styles, I mean, you know, how is it? I mean, there are some beers that you just want and you can't get. And Green Flash is one of them. Even for us, you know, in our limited, you know, Good Brew Seal bars, I can't get half the beers I want.
Yeah,
but I know the ones I want, and Green Flash is one of them.
Yeah, Green Flash is one of my favorites these days. And actually, the reason I got the Le Freak was because last week we had a rare barrel of the Green Flash Saint Fulian. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Very good.
Beer de l'Amitié, which is a collaboration they did with Saint Fulian from Belgium. And that was actually brewed in Belgium, but it's one of those Belgian IPA
hybrids.
One thing
about that beer, it had a little sweet finish.
A little bit, but you definitely tasted those West Coast hops
I think
in there
the,
as well.
The ones they actually brew at Green Flash are a little drier. Yeah. Josh, what do you think about Green Flash? Have you actually visited the brewery?
I have not visited the brewery, but I think it's they make some amazing IPAs. It's actually my fiance's favorite, their Imperial IPA, because she likes beers that smell like marijuana. And so for her, that's like the that's like her favorite beer in the world is that one, because it's got that this dank like resinous quality, and it's very.
So is that beer made for the Emperor of Russia?
I think that it's beer made for discerning potheads, or people have outgrown their pot.
Discerning potheads.
And people that have outgrown their pot smoking phase.
Discerning and pothead. I've never heard those two words together in the same sentence.
I think the older you get, the more discerning you can get as a pothead. Not super
I wouldn't know anything about it personally.
I think the wealthier you get, the more discerning you get as a pothead.
That makes more sense. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to beer.
Well, Ray, what are some of the more interesting, hard-to-get beers that you've been serving lately at DBA?
Well, Stillwater stuff coming down from...
Yeah.
That stuff's really great. And, and De La Seine, we spoke of it earlier, uh-huh. Josh mentioned. De La Seine, it's such a limited beer. It's everything that Yvonne comes out with is great. Green Flash, I'm loving. Cigar City, I'm really getting into Cigar City stuff from Florida. There's so many great beers available right now in the market. It's kind of crazy how many beers are available these days compared to...
Do you try the Cigar City Improvisacion?
I have not.
That was like I think it was the oatmeal rye.
And
it
oatmeal rye.
Yeah.
So oatmeal rye. And we have rye.
Oatmeal rye brown,
yeah. We had that last week. It was phenomenal.
What about rye meal oat?
Yeah, it's like parking on the driveway again. It's just like...
Exactly.
All right, we had a really great show here tonight. We're going to give a shout out to some of our Good Beer Seal Bar events. James, anything going on at Bronx Ale House the next couple weeks?
Events? Our next event this Thursday is just a release of a re-release. Nothing brand new, but a re-release of some of the rare and hard to find Dogfish Head ales.
Right. Red and white. Anything coming up at DBA?
Hell yeah, Jimmy. We got the Cask Festival this weekend.
This weekend.
Curated by our good friend Alex Hall. And we start on Friday at 1 o'clock, and we're going to have tons of casks ale. And on Monday, liquids of interest are going to be wheat beers. Wheat beers, right. Wheat beers, and white beers.
Carolyn, anything going on with the Malt or Barley Appreciation Society?
No. The Cask Ale Fest, obviously at DBA. Although there is a Women in Beer at the Blind Tiger this Saturday. I think it's starting in the early afternoon.
All right.
A brewer from Lagunitas is
and
coming.
I'll give a special shout out. Actually, next week we're going to have a really special guest on Beer Sessions Radio. Wendy Littlefield and Don Feiberg, right? And they'll be following that up on Thursday, April 28th. You're all invited. It's a Van Bergen DeWolf's 30th anniversary party at Jimmy's Number 43. You're going to try like all their really rare beers on draft, and they're bringing a special limited beers.
Jimmy, you just invited everybody listening to the show?
Well, why not? Come on. Okay. Come out next Thursday. You got to meet Wendy Littlefield and Don Feiberg. They're Van Bergen DeWolf 30th anniversary. They're the ones who founded Omegang Brewery. Mm-hmm. Real deans of beer and a great love for Belgian beer. Mm-hmm. And we've got also Wednesday night at Blind Tiger Ale House, Brooklyn Brewery's own Garrett Oliver will be sharing his wit and knowledge as Blind Tiger pours an awesome selection. It's his wit, that's right. Thursday is Smutty Nose Night at Barcade. Every Monday is Can Night. You forgot to tell us about Can Night at Bronx Ale House, James.
Well, I knew you were telling us about that.
Well, you tell me about
is that where you get shit
what's
canned?
Can Night?
Can Night, we highlight some of the great craft beer that they're putting in cans these
days. Top three in cans. What are your top three cans?
Great 21st Amendment stuff. They're always canning great stuff. Bitter American, Monk's Blood, Brew Free or Die.
Sly Fox 113.
Yep. Sly Fox will not be there this Monday, but often is there. And of course, all the great stuff Oscar Blues does all the time. That's every Monday night. You can get a can of beer and a delicious burger for $10.
Wow. Yeah. I think we're going.
Yeah. All right. I think we all just made a plan.
And in closing, Carolyn, one more thing.
Oh, I'm just saying I'm going to be at Can Night next Monday.
Oh, and
Ruth, wait.
Oh, go ahead.
Ruthie, come on, Ruthie.
Get on the
Well, I was just going to say, just to put it out there again, our next Alewise meeting, which is why Carolyn and I are here, is April 29th, that Friday. So you should come to that, too. You're a girl.
And I should have another homebrew tour on May 21st. It's going to be a blast with two people that are looking to start up breweries.
How do we know? How do we find out about that?
You
Josh?
Go to joshuambernstein.com and they have all the info on there.
All right. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com. Thanks to Ray, Ruth, Carolyn, and James, and Josh for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. And we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. In 2010, EscapeMaker.com won an Emmy Award for their agritourism webisode. So this year they thought, why not bring agritourism and green getaway ideas right to you? Come to the Green Getaways Local Food and Travel Expo on April 30th at One Hanson Place, home of the Brooklyn Flea and former Williamsburg Savings Bank. Presented by Amtrak, Zipcar, and I Love New York, the carbon-free event will be a day filled with food, prizes, workshops, and kids' activities. Over 50 getaway destinations, from counties to local farms and bed and breakfasts within a day's drive or train ride of New York City, will be exhibiting on the main floor and in the huge bank vault downstairs. See what's hot in sustainable travel and receive special show-only discounts. Grow NYC will be doing workshops on the green market, and Appalachian Mountain Club will offer workshops on adventure bicycling and hiking via mass transit. EscapeMaker.com will be giving away over 50 getaway prizes, ranging from zipline adventure passes to an overnight stay at Mohonk Mountain House. Travel greener, eat local. Come to the expo on April 30th. Get your tickets now at www.escapemaker.com. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.